Pickaxe.
If you like to eat stress-free and healthy, like me, you can do it this spring with Factor. They have delicious, ready-to-eat meals, everyone is fresh, never frozen, and chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to go in just 2 minutes. You can choose from a weekly menu of 35 different options, including popular ones such as Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or like me, vegan and veggie. There are more than 60 add-ons you can discover every week, such as breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks and beverages to help you stay fueled and feeling good all day long. So what are you waiting for? Get started today and fuel up for your springtime goals. If you're looking for gourmet options, there are meals that have premium ingredients, such as filet mignon, shrimp, truffle butter, broccolini and asparagus. And they are no fuss, no mess. Factor eliminates the hassle of prepping, cooking and cleaning up. Simply heat and enjoy the good stuff. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility to get as much or as little as you need, and you can pause or reschedule deliveries at any time. Factor is your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. This month, we're celebrating Earth Day. Look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for our lowest carbon footprint meals. So head on over to factormeals.com/pickaxe50 and you can use code PICKAXE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your second box. That's PICKAXE50 at factormeals.com/PICKAXE50 to get 50% off your first box, plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is going. Check it out.
That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the Triforce podcast. This week, what have I done in like two sentences? I did nothing. Stayed at home, played video games. I shaved my beard off after I found out that it was really, really annoying. And then I realized how fat my face looks due to all the lockdown. And I didn't realize. So
wait, that happened last?
I'm sad about it. And I'm wondering how long it's going to take to grow back.
Didn't that happen last week as well? I thought that happened to you last week, too. Shaving of the beard and realizing
probably
you had a fat face.
It's in fact, it's in that case, this week's gone by so fast that my beard hasn't grown back enough to I was just looking at myself in the mirror and I was like,
I shaved my I had a semi-lockdown beard.
Nice.
That I'd been growing just through sheer bone idleness.
I saw, yeah, because you posted saying old, really old looking old man or
yeah,
whatever.
And
I was that beard
makes it is like it is amazing what a difference it makes to
cabin
to your face.
It looks like, look at one of those adventurers of old.
Cabin fever beard is definite bit of cabin
Arctic
fever
explorer beard.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
But an Arctic explorer that didn't make it.
Just found the emaciated skeleton in a tent with a little journal.
The one that they found in the tent, frozen with his mouth wide open.
Yeah. Day 55, missing Dota, playing it in my head. there was a really annoying Earthshaker who called me a noob.
Had a really good anti-mage run.
Wish I could shave this beard off. Scissors frozen solid for 3 months now.
God. Day 57. Luke tried to shave his own beard off with his knife, but cut his head off by accident. Thinking about Dota.
That would be me.
That is the worst.
Day 58.
I've just been playing fucking Tarkov night and day. I'm all over it.
So can you describe to me why Tarkov is alluring? What is the addictive part? What is like the one bit of the game that is the most exciting bit? Is it hoarding stuff in your inventory? Like, what is it? I don't understand what gameplay
Have you played it?
No, I have. Well, okay. Yeah, I played it like a couple of hours, but
I
didn't get it.
Okay. No, that's fair. So there are actually a lot of different ways that you can play Tarkov, which is one thing that I like about it.
Yeah.
You can play as a more of a snipey kind of lad. You can play as someone who, like a Chad, who wears all the big armor and goes and fights the other Chads. You can try and just like focus on quests and farming, you know, loot to make money rather than looking for fights. You can do the rat play, which is what I favor, where you go in with very cheap gear and either try and sneak a kill on a powerful player or pick over the bodies of dead, you know, geared up players, which is one of my favorite tactics. So if you imagine there's a battle going on between Chads and they're like fighting, pew, 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 and I'm just the guy crawling in there and taking gear off one of the dead guys before they can loot him, and then I'll sneak off, you know, or for having good keys to open locked areas on Tarkov that maybe other people aren't at yet and taking the good gear and stuff. So the appeal for me is the fact that there are lots of different ways to play, and the way that I enjoy playing, which is rat Tarkov, sneaking in there, or just charging straight for the high value loot, depends on what I'm feeling like. Killing geared up players with bad guns is very satisfying. I would say the most satisfying thing is when you find a really, really valuable piece of loot, get it up your butthole so it can't be dropped, and then extract. Like that tense extract is very, it's like a huge relief when you get out of the level, all your gear is, you know, secured, you can sell stuff that you found. It's a great feeling. It is a great feeling. But the best thing is when Chad tries to kill you and you somehow kill Chad. That's my absolute favorite.
Yeah, that's always a highlight for sure.
It's weird. Like, it sounds like almost like you're describing an MMO or something where you are.
Well, it's meant to be
just
an
trying
MMO.
To collect stuff.
I think it. Yeah. I think it is. It, like, even more so, will become an MMO in the future.
I really hope not. Actually, like, I know that.
I think that's the vision for the game.
I know that they said that one of the things they want to add. So at the moment, Lewis, if you can imagine, each of the maps is like a separate raid instance. So like a raid in WoW.
Yeah, and you have to
thing.
Learn them. There's nothing randomized. Everything's learned. Map learning.
The loot is randomized.
The loot's randomized. The spawns of NPCs are randomized.
It's like semi-randomized. So
and
so
you're never
you know
guaranteed to know how many players there are on the map and where they spawn either. So there's definitely random elements to it.
So the loot is sort of tends to be better in certain areas, but sometimes it's like, holy shit. Like, and other times it's just like, it's pretty crap. So it has that random element to it. It's definitely not sort of rigid. So it's got that loot boxy element to it that, say, WoW has, you know, where you kill the boss, you want to see what loot he's dropped. So it's kind of like that. And killing other players, obviously, sometimes you kill a player and you're like, holy shit, like this guy had loads of stuff and you get that and stuff. And also the price of things is kind of dictated by the in-game player-to-player market, the flea market, as they call it. So you'll suddenly notice that some item you've got a lot of is actually gone up in value for some reason. Like fuel at the moment is worth a bloody fortune for some reason. So it's just little things like that. Also, there's like quests that you can do and you level up your guy. So there is a lot to it.
Do you know what I mean, though, about the MMO thing? And like almost the gacha thing that you said, that seems to be the way.
I don't know what a gacha thing is. What is that?
So gacha is the loot box. Well, basically, it means loot box. It's gachapon machines are in Japan. They're these little ball machines. You see them here as well, where you put like a 100 yen in, it's like a quid, and you get like a little fucking ball with a random thing from a series. And it'll have like, there's gachapon machines in Japan for everything. But that's the loose description for what like Genshin Impact the MMO is, but also almost all mobile games are, like, where you get loot boxes with random things in.
I mean, they were around when I was a kid. You'd see them outside sweet shops or corner stores or whatever. There's like a little, I don't know if they, you don't see them as much anymore. It was like a glass, what do they call them? Like a sweet machine. You put your coin in, you turn the thing.
Yeah,
and
they still have them dotted around. They're not as popular as they were like a long time
ago. But they're
ago.
big in Japan. And yeah, it's a kind of mechanic of, like, I guess paying over the odds for, if you like,
potentially
fairly
shit.
Cheap.
Yeah.
But it's also a kind of, I don't know, it must appeal to something human in our desire to collect stuff and assemble all of them. And also it must appeal to the sort of the idea of you've spent money in this and real life money in this.
Yeah.
Therefore you're invested in it now and you're going to put more in. I don't know. There's certain, there's obviously some hooks to make it work. And it's quite fun, honestly, like as a thing, as well as a concept. You can see why it would be like a fun way to build, you know, a monetization structure. You know, it's definitely the latest one of the evolution of the thing. And so, yeah, in a sense, like that idea of you could find anything when you go in is very similar to that. I guess I've been interested in... So I played a bit of WoW and I sort of quit again after I realized... I don't know, as soon as I start falling into the trap of... Yeah, I've talked about this before, but it's like as soon as I see something that I'm doing before, I'm like, I don't want to do that. So I've tried over the last couple of months to play new games. Like this week I played Unavowed, which is a point and click.
Right.
And I know that, you know, you've played a lot of point and click sips, but... Man, I love a point and click. I don't know. There's something good. I mean, sometimes with a point and click, they're relatively short, so you can have the story. The story is usually quite locked in, so you can't really change the. It's not like a game where you can really change the ending too heavily.
Yeah,
right.
But also, there's the puzzles are quite fun usually, and they're obviously usually quite limited. And you get this sort of abrupt bit where you're stuck. You're like, okay, do I use the I've got a code and I've got a door and I've got a frog and I've got a stick. Like what do I do here?
Right.
Like, and then you have to do something slightly cryptic. You know, you use the stick on the frog and then it's like, I don't think I should do that. And it's like, okay, I use the frog on the code. It's like, how is a frog going to decipher code? You're like, okay. And do you know what I mean? And then you use the frog on the sausage and it's like, oh, the sausage is now covered in frog slime. It's like, oh, okay.
That's my problem with those games is that a lot of the time it was just repetition. Like, it's a bit like a hidden object game. Essentially, if you just click on every single part of the screen, as long as it's not timed, there's no real peril. Like, it's like, you know, the number of rooms you can go to is limited. You have a limited number of items in your inventory. You just have to combine them and combine each of those with each thing that you can interact with, and eventually you'll get the puzzle. I think that's always been my issue with those point and clicks.
But despite that, it's still sometimes very hard to get to that point.
Yeah, I don't know
even
how.
Even with a very limited...
I've been like, stuck so many times, and I'm like,
I've been stuck in a one room
this.
Game with two items. Do you know what I mean?
I don't know how.
Yeah, and so no, I love all those games. I played all the Cube Escape and the Rusty Lake type games. I think they're sort of the modern point and click games, and they're really great. And anyway, this Unavowed, it was Yahtzee's game of the year from like a couple of years back, and they've made a bunch of other point and clicks actually, which I've heard of and never played, but I think I might make my way through them now because I really, really enjoyed this. It's kind of like a modern. It's like quite unusual that it's set in modern day, because so many like game worlds are set in obviously either fantasy or supernatural or like some sort of weird future space or in space. There's like very few games that are actually set, when you think about it, in the current day. And I wonder why that is. I think it maybe because it's too difficult to replicate the mundane weirdness of the modern time. Do you know what I mean? When we look back at old times, when we look back at old presidents and things like this, like, you know, maybe it's just because we've had this recent issue, but when we look back at things like Reagan or George Bush, you know, that it was always felt, I think at the time there was a sentiment that was like a pretty embarrassing president to have, you know, a celebrity president or this kind of inept man. I don't know. I think that, but history has this fog of making them into these, I don't know, authority figures who are kind of, you know. And so I'm playing like Call of Duty. I played the new Call of Duty, and it's got like Reagan in it. You know, it's a CGI Reagan doing his speeches.
Doing Reagan
stuff.
I'm
kind of like, he looks like quite cool. He looks like...
Well,
like,
I think it's the like, familiarity. You know, like, especially with Reagan, I find he was on TV a lot when I was a kid, you know, like... Growing up in North America and seeing him on TV a lot, it kind of just takes you back to being a kid, not understanding anything about the world or politics or whatever. And it's almost like a comfort thing. But, you know, as an adult, when you read up about him and you look back on it, you're like, okay, well, I can see why people were so angry at the time and like why so much like sort of aggressive culture, music, everything came out of the time that he was around and the things that he did or whatever. But I mean, it's different for like, I guess, the generation that grew up around him, you know?
It is weird.
Yeah.
It's this fog of history that kind of gives things this weird, I don't know, authenticity, I don't know, like it cements them in this place where you almost can understand them completely. When something's happening right now, maybe with Donald Trump and stuff, it all feels so unstable and like what the fuck is happening. Whereas at least like when you're looking back at Reagan, you're like, this is what happened there, and these are what people feel like is the consensus of history. You know, it's almost been cemented.
Yeah, I feel like some ways, even Trump being so old, like he's quite old. He's like, you know, previous to previous generations from us, and we're like middle aged or whatever. At the same time, I feel kind of like he's a product of the time, you know, like he's this day and age kind of demands like TikTok sound bites, like they want to be outraged. They want people to say outrageous things. They want, you know, like, and you had elements of that in the past, but never like now, you know what I mean? Like I feel now it's at its worst, and Trump really played up to
amazing.
A lot of that.
I mean, I wonder whether we're going to have things set in this age, you know, in the sense that, you know, there was the age of sort of tape decks and kind of that sort of shady, sort of dusty CIA sneaking around in post-World War II bunkers, you know, doing their spy stuff. You know, yeah. I remember all that as a real cool setting, right? And then there was, you know, the 80s and like kind of, and now we're in this kind of, we're in the information age, but now I think we're in the misinformation age.
Yes.
Where nothing is real. Everyone is lying. There's just, no one knows what to believe. Everyone is just full of, like, I don't know why people are so hot for the lies. I understand it. I just understand the allure of like a conspiracy theory. And it's not like this a new thing. You know, people were doubting the moon landings, you know, 30 years ago. It's not like there weren't conspiracy theories, you know, before. But I feel like it's just taken itself to this other level of madness. And I wonder whether in the future people will look back on this and be like, well, did everyone just take crazy pills? Or whether it's just going to carry on down this road into the future.
Yeah. It's scary.
And
scary.
I'm just wondering how this time is going to be cemented in kind of history.
I think it'll be neither here nor there. I think it's one of those things that right now, it feels like a big thing. It feels like everything. But I feel like even in 4 years' time, you know, nobody's really going to look back on the past 4 years as significant in any way. Like, it's just...
That's incredibly optimistic of you. That is actually...
I mean, it's one of those things
optimistic.
where maybe some things that have happened in the past like couple of years will have like a longer term impact or whatever, but I'd say most things won't. Like, I can't, I think COVID is something that people will remember back for sure, obviously, but I don't think anything sort of like recently before COVID is overly sort of impactful or memorable. Mm. I don't think it's going to set the tone for like pop culture in 20 years time or anything like that. You know what I mean? But maybe they felt like that in the 80s, like you were talking about with like Contras, tape decks, the CIA and all that kind of stuff. I don't think anybody really thought that was going to be the memorable thing from the 80s. Like,
well, that's what I remember. Yeah. Well, not remember, but that's because I'm interested in reading about it and stuff. But I've been watching a few things about that on the old Netflix, and you know, just 80s crack and Contras and stuff. I don't know. It's interesting to read about this stuff and learn about it. But I guess time is. I watched a Vsauce video about he did this cool video about time. Where he like started the video by like shaving his beard off,
right,
and then growing it back in like 3 months. So he'd obviously made the thing over like 4 months or whatever. I thought that was quite a little gimmick, but it was funny. I recommend you watch his stuff because it's kind of
optimistic though, Flax. I mean, think of like what do you think that's happened it has like any legs or is gonna be mentioned? Like even big things or seemingly big things like Brexit and stuff already feel like they're forgotten. Like,
it's,
you know,
not. What are you talking about? I mean,
you're right.
Sorry, are you still thinking about Brexit constantly or even occasionally?
Have you not seen what's happening? Like it's unraveling right now. People are discovering the impact and it hasn't even really begun to hit yet. Mm. You think people are just going to forget about it?
Well,
like the stories are about what a fucking shit show it's been. Even the papers that backed it were like, we fucked this up. And like you got that, like all these ridiculous stories coming out about you know, people not being able to get things, the shortage of all kinds of things because of it. And it's only just now starting to kick in.
Yeah.
The idea that it's, you know, oh, people aren't, forget about Brexit. Well, yeah, because we've had COVID, it's kind of distracted a little bit.
But that's what I mean. We'll ease into the shit show. It's not like a hard stop where it's going to be like, fuck, the day everything changed because of Brexit. You know what I mean? Like it's going to be so gradual and probably terrible, but I don't think it's going to be looked back on as like,
I think this period of politics can go one of a few ways. One, the most optimistic one, which I think is like your take on it would be that the only reason we discuss this era would be as a kind of what the fuck. And you'd do a thesis on the bonkers politics and, you know, what happened in 2015 to 2025, whatever, like that decade of how everything went a bit nuts. And now, phew, we're back to normal now. I think that's an optimistic take. I think things are going to get progressively worse and worse from here.
Well, this is the attitude that everyone sort of starts to get, though, if they're not careful. I think looking through history, I guess with the time thing Vsauce was talking about, it was very much this idea of like short time and long time, and how something can, you know, you can have a day that feels like you've not done anything, you know, and it's dragged on and on, and you can have another day where you're on holiday and you do 20 things and it's over in seconds, but it was like absolutely jam-packed full of stuff, you know, you remember it long and it felt short. And, you know, anyway, I think with history we have these obviously key moments, you know, you like name a thing that happened, you know, between World War One and World War Two, you know, or between World War Two and the moon landing, or between the moon landing and 9/11, or between 9/11 and what's now, COVID.
Yeah.
Like, you know, what's the big, like, you know, landmark historical events?
Right.
You know, is Brexit going to be a tiny little footnote in, you know, history? Probably yes, actually, in terms of like the global memory of the world.
Yeah.
You know, I think COVID is going to overshadow absolutely all
of that.
Because,
yeah,
you know, more people, more Americans died in the last year of COVID than in World War II. I heard that yesterday on Biden's speech, which is an amazing statistic, you know, to hear.
Yeah.
That 400,000 people in America have died of COVID. 2 million people worldwide. That's a lot of, it's a really powerful, it's a really impactful thing. And, you know, we live in a really funny, scary time, and it's very stressful for a lot of people.
I mean, COVID is, of course, going to be the big story of this decade, if you like. And I think the impact will be extremely harshly felt around the world for a long time, because for one thing,
but also
it's not just the deaths, which is like appalling in itself. The effect that this is going to have, we just had an economic crash in 2008, just about recovering from that, starting to get back to where we were, like the amount lost meant that decade was essentially a lost decade, if you like, because where we would have been if the crash hadn't happened, you know, it would have been, we would have been better off as a planet, like, you know, economically speaking. The crash cost us a ridiculous amount, vanished so much money that we've just been able to creep back to. Then COVID
hits. You say that though, but like, you know, in economic terms, like, yes, that's real, but we did step in at the right time to stop it all completely. Good businesses falling apart. What you have to have in a capitalist economy, a cycle system where bad businesses are allowed to fail. You can't keep running terrible businesses. You know, that cafe down the road, which has never got anyone in it, can't keep borrowing money
again. The crash was that everybody fucking like felt the impact.
It wasn't
just a bad business. Like, that's the issue.
But on average, every sort of 10 to 15 years, there is some sort of correction, or at least like,
I mean, there has to be
a chance for businesses to fail.
But this is what
bad businesses are failing right
now.
I
think that the issue is when it's not a bad business and it fails.
Yeah, that's the issue.
That's when we have crashes.
Why the government is working on trying to like give businesses like these, you know, tied over things and keep the airlines going and stuff, because, you know, otherwise good businesses are going to go under just because all the airports are closed and stuff, and that would be bad. And that's the kind of thing that really, you know, can be damaging for economies. And that's what's scary, isn't it? Yeah.
So
sure.
I mean, in terms of like looking back on this era, some people will look back on it. I mean, for instance, one of the things I've been reading about lately is this QAnon stuff, right? Who is like this guy who claims to be, I think, some kind of government insider who has like this grand plan and this day of reckoning and all this kind of stuff.
Right, right.
And there's a whole bunch of threads on Twitter that are posting screenshots of these people on the QAnon message boards If you don't know anything about it, go and look it up if you're listening to this. Although don't go and look it up, but you could if you wanted to.
QAnon is something which I think everyone probably has heard about. It's literally the weirdest conspiracy theory and the worst one. The one which, if you believe in it, you probably also need mental help.
Well, there are people running on it. Like saying I'm a QAnon guy, like as politicians, like
at the top of that conspiracy theory madness. Right. Though. It's like there's no evidence, and it's just completely wild.
Think worse than that, it's trying to act like a crystal ball, and they're like, wait for this day, this is going to happen, then that, trust us, this is the way it's going to be. Like they were saying that at noon on Inauguration Day, Trump and the military were going to zoom in and declare martial law and re-seize power and chuck out all the bad actors, arrest them, send them to Guantanamo. I'm not kidding. This was what they were saying was going to happen. And the message board is...
So they're almost like some sort of cult where the aliens are going to come literally in and scoop them up.
And an awful lot of people now are saying, I can't believe we were lied to. And, you know, I'm shaking and crying right now, you know, because they thought this was actually going to happen. And what scares me is that it's not just that they thought it was going to happen. They were like, yes, this is what needs to happen. They are actively praying for a military coup in a democracy, the democracy, the leading democracy in the world. They want a military coup. They think the election was stolen. My fucking dad thinks the election was stolen. And I was like, where is your evidence? Your evidence is this guy Q who says some shit, and you're like, well, I better believe that. It's like, how are you claiming that you're doing your research and we're the ones being lied to, and you're believing some random internet guy who's just saying this stuff, and none of it's coming true, and you're still like, this is all part of the plan. It's mad.
Oh, that is
just mad.
That's crazy.
That it's reached into your dad's brain. There is a Netflix thing I saw about that. It was like, I can't remember. It's actually called something like the corruption of my dad or whatever.
it's just Facebook, and I don't know where dads believe
all this stuff. It's like, it is a really dad thing, isn't it?
What? It's not just dads though. It's
kind
like
of is. It kind of is just, though. Like it feels like
it should be. You're
I'm
right.
generalizing,
it feels like, but
that's
not.
That is completely the kind of stuff that I think my dad would get into at this point in his life.
I just think they're very trusting.
He's older. He's retired. Maybe he's like seen some shit, you know, like, I don't know. It just seems like
the brainwashing of my dad.
I think they didn't grow up with the internet the way we did. Like, I mean, we understood the early days of the internet, and then we sort of had experience of the bullshit of the internet. You just do not fucking believe everything that you read. And right. I think they're coming from an era when if it's printed, it's the truth, because that's the way newspapers used to be. They used to fucking print facts and stuff like that. And now nobody believes journalists. They believe some anonymous guy on the internet press. What is happening?
To some degree, you have to be seeking this stuff out too, right? Like, it's not like he's just stumbled across something that's just all of a sudden opened his eyes and changed his life, right? Like, he has to be looking around for fringe sort of stuff.
It's on Facebook. It's everywhere.
But I think this has been happening in the background for 20 or 30 years with Fox News and with sort of, you know, certainly in America with the Republic, dividing of the two sides of this. You know, there used to be a lot of crossover, and now it's very divisive and very kind of angry, and I feel like this is just the next logical step in the misinformation, the propaganda war.
I've always said that I think that the issue with the internet that I have, and this is my opinion, is exactly that. Everybody has a fucking opinion,
right,
and they get to rate other people's opinions, post their own opinions and thoughts, and they shouldn't. Most people should shut the fuck up and not worry about all this complicated shit like the government beyond, you know, the stuff that you need to be an active member of a democratic society. You don't understand half this stuff. I don't understand half this stuff because I'm an expert any more than I would go into a doctor's surgery and say, you're doing that wrong. Like, it's not my business, if you like. I'm not in the business of running a country. Now, that doesn't mean I can't complain when it goes tits up. I absolutely should. But the idea that I should understand as a layperson the depths of our economic agreement with the EU is ridiculous. It's incredibly complicated by its nature. It's a vast and complex system. But everybody now feels entitled to have their shitty opinion. Someone sees someone's shitty opinion that's ill-informed and idiotic at best, agrees with it, and now they have that opinion as well. And then you have arseholes coming in like Donald Trump. The dude knew nothing about how a country ran. Didn't understand the rules. Didn't understand what he could and couldn't do. Didn't understand how America functioned. Didn't understand international trade. Knew nothing. Knew nothing. Claimed to be a genius. Knew nothing about it, very clearly. I mean, for example, one thing that they'd been doing is taping back together all the stuff that he ripped up during office. He would read something and go, bah, and tear it in half and throw it away. Now, the president has to keep communications and documents because it's a matter of historical record and he's a public servant. So there is a bunch of people fucking physically sellotaping shit back together. I shit you not, that he tore up. It's laughable. And these are the kind of people you get in charge when you give people the option to post their stupid, shitty opinion and think it matters. Because if I put something on Facebook and three people like it, I feel validated. Those three people could be the three stupidest people I know.
Yeah.
I might have had my post liked by three morons. And I think three likes. Wow, that's amazing.
Oh, on that topic, I saw your post this morning and I left a like as well.
Nice. I'm not a smart person, but I can at least see that I'm stupid. People don't accept that they are just fucking thick. We're thick. Stop making out you're smart and posting your stupid opinions as if they're fact and expecting to be told, when is the coup coming? And then some guy says, midday. Great, yeah, I believe that. Why? Why are you believing some guy on the internet tells you there's going to be a military coup in the United States? And you're like, yeah, it's coming.
You believe what you want to believe, though. That's the thing. It's not even a rational thing, right? It's part belief, and then there's hope that it's going to happen, too. Like, these people are kind of desperate, right? Like, everything that they wanted, everything that they believed in was being taken from them. So of course they're just going to be like thinking that, when you're up against the wall, you know, you're just going to be hoping for like a miracle at that point, right? And I guess,
but would
like,
a miracle be a military dictatorship
for them?
Is that
a
miracle? How is that going to improve anyone's life?
Well,
how is that
going to
improve your life?
Maybe it's just very narrow-minded. They think that it's
people
somehow going to improve just their life, which it wouldn't. I mean, like, you know, you're talking about a person who just doesn't care about anybody but himself, like, at all. Like, and he's proven it like a million times over, even before becoming the president. I don't know how. I don't understand the mentality of supporting him and thinking that he's, you know, some sort of catalyst for good. But like,
I think
crazy.
A lot of people were very angry because an awful lot of America has had a shit time of it economically for a long time. They feel abandoned and forgotten despite the fact that, you know, they fucking still live in America. I mean, Jesus, not like parts of America look like the Sudan or whatever, and it's like, you know, just roving gangs and raping and pillaging and murder and famine and everything.
No.
But it's not what they view of America should be, which was this kind of American dream. You know, you work, you get the things you need. You're not fucking broke all the time. You're not feeling shitty all the time. Your kids aren't addicted to opioids all the fucking time. Like, it's not this vision of America that they've got of it falling apart. I think, like you were saying, I think it's been fired up by Fox News highlighting every single thing that happens as, well, America's crumbling again. I mean, do you remember when their big story was the war on Christmas and the idea that Christmas was being eroded? Oh, you can't say Christmas anymore. Have you seen Christmas? It's fucking everywhere. For 3 months, it's Christmas, Christmas, Christmas. You can't get away from Christmas.
Yeah.
But they're told that there's a war on Christmas, and so they think there is.
Well, I think they're touching on something which is a very broad topic, and I think it is the squeezing of the middle class and the idea that, you know, an ordinary two parents working full-time can't afford to have a mortgage in a family, you know, like the idea that the rich have squeezed too hard and that the minimum wage hasn't increased and people still can't, you know, you get sick, you have to go into debt for 5 years. You know, the idea that doesn't seem like the American dream. And I think a lot of people are frustrated with that.
Right.
I think that the millions of people are not, well, you know, and the majority of people are, sure, the richest of the folks, you know.
I mean, that's something that people on any side of the
political... People are now saying, oh, now the American dream is, I want a swimming pool. Where's my swimming pool? You know, the people are like, right, you know, how am I going to pay my debts? How am I going to pay down this? You know, there's this culture where you buy everything on credit. You know, everyone buys cars on credit and everything on credit. And it's crazy, really. Like, you know, you see it a little bit here here in
we have a huge amount of consumer debt over here, a huge amount. People owe a fortune.
Are taken advantage of though with these sort of things, but they kind of have to because they're not paid enough to live. You know, with their work often or looked after. Well, I don't know. It's a troublesome thing, and I think that it is a symptom of the majority of the people not feeling like they can live comfortably.
But here's what blows my mind, is that the problems you're describing, lack of healthcare, job, like the average sort of salary, if you look at the graph that shows salary increase over time compared to cost of living, the amount that people are earning on average has barely gone up in like fucking 30 or 40 years. Like, it's such a flat line. And the cost of living and all the things that we need in a consumerist society, you need people to spend money on things like phones and cars or it all falls apart. So, Fox did a thing where they said, how poor are these people really? Well, they have fridges, so they're not that poor. It's like, you're living in America and you're saying that people with fridges are not, don't count as poor. It's America. And a fridge is a modern appliance in a consumer society that everybody should fucking have.
I think poor people have more fridges. I always see like three or four in their garden.
Yeah.
They got a load of sofas out there too.
Extra fridges, yeah.
But it's like that's now an indicator of poverty. Is if you've got a fridge, can you really call yourself poor? Yeah. Yeah, you can. You've got a fridge, dude. Like, that doesn't make
you
a wealthy man.
Bad news here from Fox News. America's poor only have 3 to 4 fridges in their gardens now. It used to be 5 to 6 in the 80s. So we've got a sizable drop there.
That's how you'd count it. Man, how many fridges do the poor have in their front yards?
On the subject of America in the 80s, I watched a 4-part documentary series on Netflix called The Night Stalker. Have you heard of it?
Oh, I watched that too. Yeah, yeah.
Yes, I watched it.
Oh,
also.
Oh my God.
Yeah. I enjoyed it. It was quite dramatic.
Oh my
it was
God.
Quite like
it was a little melodramatic at times, I thought. Like, it was a little lurid. I also didn't think it needed to be 4 parts.
But one thing that they didn't touch on in the whole thing, because it was kind of 3 episodes of him going on this like killing spree basically over 6 months or so, and sexually abusing adults and children.
The
attacking
dude did
people,
everything. He did everything.
People.
He did everything. It was
unbelievable.
Crazy. To the point where I didn't believe it.
Right.
I was like, everything in my head was like, I don't believe that this guy done all that stuff.
I don't think he done it.
No, I think he definitely done it. He was a very, very, very disturbed person. I think he just had been for his whole life. But one thing that they didn't mention in the documentary was that they mentioned that he passed away in 2013. But I think in like, it must have been like 2003 or something like that. He got married while he was death row to
was something they did a lot of in the documentary. Yeah. So he was this sort of dreamy looking guy.
His teeth.
Yeah.
But apparently he had terrible teeth.
Yeah.
And the thing that actually annoyed me most about this, spoilers for the documentary, is they went to a dentist and they were like, he came to the dentist. He said, oh, I've had a problem with my teeth. Can I come back? And so they were like, sure, you can come back. What we'll do is we'll set up a little button in the we can't stay at the dentist studio all the time. We're just going to set up a button. So if the dentist sees you come in, he'll press the button and then we'll get a call and we'll send a squad car around and we'll pick up this guy who's killed 10 people, you know, and raped a load of people and abducted a load of children and killed a load of grannies. He's done all sorts of bad stuff. What we'll do is we'll put a little button in for you. And then we'll you can tell us if he comes back. And obviously he comes back and they press the fucking button and no, the button doesn't work.
It's amazing.
And so the police don't get him. And then he goes on to kill another 10 people.
Yeah.
And I'm like, oh, that's so fucking 80.
It really is.
Like, it's so lazy.
The car
these
that they had.
Fucking, I can't believe they didn't station a fucking
cop. They had cops. They took them out the day they put the button in.
It's amazing.
Okay, but the thing is, this is sort of like the age old issue, and this is why in the 70s and
we're
in the
80s, we're supposed to congratulate these people for finding this fucking guy, and I'm like, you are shit.
No, but they're not though. The system was completely fucked back then. Like, these guys were just doing what they could given the situation.
I don't think so. The whole documentary was sucking off these cops, saying how fucking amazing they were finding this guy and patting themselves on the back. And
They were shit for years and years. And he got away with way more stuff.
Next time you walk into a house where somebody's been raped and murdered and you're the guy who has to investigate it, weigh up what you just said as well. The fucking toll it takes on people in general, having to deal with that shit and then to say that they're shit. They're not shit. They were fine.
I don't know.
The problem is that police precincts back then did not share information.
Never spoke
to each other. There was so much bureaucracy. There were so many more mistakes made by mayors and other politicians leaking information and stuff. I mean, there's blood on everybody involved's hands, and it's because the system was dog shit.
I mean, didn't you see the bit with the car where some other jurisdiction got it?
Yeah.
And they sat on the car for so long just saying, oh, yeah, we'll print it. No, you can't print it.
Yeah.
That the sun melted all the prints, and they only found one thing in there. And the amazing thing is that when they found the card months later of his dentist, like, then they realized, oh, shit, like, if we'd had this at the fucking time, we would have caught him a month ago.
Yeah.
Because he went to the dentist a couple of days after that. And it was mind-blowing.
Yeah, yeah.
They had so much working against them.
Yeah.
Like the shoe. The mayor saying, we know his shoes.
Yeah.
What are you doing?
And also, it wasn't an investigation that went on for years either. Like, it was a thing that happened in like a year and a half, pretty much, in total from start
to finish.
It
wasn't even that long. His killing spree was like a few months, wasn't it?
Like, yeah, it was six, seven months or so. Which is long enough. I mean, holy fuck. I mean, can you imagine?
I'm not saying can we have more killing.
No, but like
this was a short amount of time.
Can you fucking imagine living in that city at the time happening, where every night, like for a period of 6 months, one or two of these crimes is being committed?
It's crazy.
Just be like so fucking petrified, right? But then
he was a big scary looking guy,
but then the community sort of outpouring around it, you know, when like the manhunt was on, was incredible. You know, like you had people following the bus that, you know, people were yelling in the streets, he's on the bus, and people were like following the bus, and he got off the bus and he was running, and people were running him down in the street, hitting him with a lead pipe and everything. Like, it was unbelievable. Like, because all of a sudden they just sort of, they knew who they were after
and
the information was out, but he didn't have time to react to it because he was out of town or something. He came back.
Yeah, he was at his cousin's
or something. He came back and he's like in a convenience store buying something. He looks at the paper and he's plastered all over the front page of like every newspaper. And all of a sudden everybody's like, it's him! Running after him and shit. Fuck.
I mean,
me.
That is like something from a movie. The idea that you're buying some gum and you and the newsstand guy look at the paper and there's your face saying, mass murder of, you know, this is him. And you're just like, could I have a pack of Marlboro as well, please? And he's like, no problem. Keep the change. Do you know where the nearest jet plane is so I can get the fuck out of here? It was crazy.
Fuck me, man. Like, it's crazy. But honestly, like, I saying that, I mean, the documentary, I know what you mean. Like, maybe it was a bit hammy at points or whatever.
The documentary was fine, but that dentist thing just irritated me so
bad.
Well,
yeah. That wasn't their fault.
It was a huge fuck up. But it was just the way, I mean, he's one of many serial killers who got away, well, quite literally with murder, but were allowed to go on these sprees for long periods of time because of all of these problems with like the structure of police precincts, sharing information, just the cascading of information across like different bureaus or whatever you want to call it, sort of thing. You know what I mean? Like, it was hard for them to even work together when one of the killings or two of them were done in San Francisco as opposed to LA. You know what I mean? It was like this big thing where they had to like come together and share information and everything. And then they couldn't control what was happening because the chief in San Francisco wanted to do one thing and the guy in LA wanted to do another thing. So it's just like, it's just impossible. There's no consistency to it.
Yeah, it's so stupid.
Stacked against them. It's crazy.
I mean, I think one of the reasons that would happen, especially in America, is because so many public offices are like elected. So that feels like freedom and like, great, we get to elect our sheriff and our, you know, coroner and all this shit.
Sure.
But all it really means is that every single thing that pops up that is good publicity, everybody wants in on a piece of the pie, wants to keep it for themselves because that's how they get reelected.
Yeah.
So rather than just do their fucking jobs, their first concern is and always will be, How does this make me look? Will this get me reelected? And that's like their focus. So the mayor coming out and saying, I'm going to fucking give you all the information that we have on the killer, which was the dumbest thing ever.
Yeah.
Her primary focus is, how can I look like the concerned mayor who's helping? I'm not going to talk to the police. I'm not going to discuss this with the detectives in charge of the case. I'm just going to fucking come out and do it because I'm the mayor and I need to get reelected. I mean, obviously, we elect mayors over here, but they don't have anywhere near the amount of power, seemingly, that mayors have in America.
Yeah, yeah.
So it's just like, why are you electing the fucking sheriff? Like, that's so stupid. Why don't you appoint the best, most experienced person for the job rather than let the fucking idiot public decide, which is what coming back to... Everybody thinks that their opinion matters. Everybody.
But also, there was this
I don't know
great
who'd make
scene.
A good fucking sheriff, but it'll be the guy whose name I see.
With the press lady who was like, yeah, I found the information that that was obviously key, and I was just going to publish it. And so I just held it over the cops' heads and I was like, well, I'm going to publish this unless you give me something. And it's like, give me a story. Tell me
reporting.
Some papers or I'm going to ruin your case. Yeah. And she was just casually being like, that's how it is.
I love how she's reminiscing like that she's some sort of fucking hero of the situation when she was probably like one of the most damaging influences like on the entire case.
I mean, literally threatening to ruin the case.
I just found it amazing how that's the mindset though. That's the mindset of people. Like they're so blind to the fact that what they're doing is like unbelievably
terrible.
The worst thing
she said was when she was like, you know, I have a cat and every once in a while the cat scares me at night. Like I open my eyes and the cat is staring at me like after I've been sleeping. And then I imagined that it was the killer. I was like, yeah, but it never was for you. What are you fucking talking about? People have been fucking killed here, you crazy, batshit, insane person.
And like, you're saying that you're quite happy to release stuff which lets him kill more people. You're quite happy letting him kill more people.
That was the worst.
Yet, like, it's
she
insane.
She was
like,
unbelievably out of touch with the situation and everything.
But it's amazing. Like, that's why I love these documentaries, though, because they really,
and then
like,
I think it was her editor. Like, you know, all this is going on, and he's like, oh, you know, she really went through the mill. You know, you can see scars. No, she fucking didn't. Like, what are you talking about?
Made it worse.
Yeah, she did actively made it worse. Like, I don't think she was affected by any of this. Like, you know, there was nobody in her family was murdered or anything. Like, well, I mean, it's crazy to speak about somebody like that when there's people who actually were killed.
Yeah, it's nuts.
So no, I really enjoyed the documentary. It was a little bit overly dramatic in places, a little bit too sad in places, a little bit too like, and there were some really gory stories.
Yeah,
stuff,
yeah,
which
yeah.
was a bit. It felt like it went a bit too far.
But that's why I thought it was too lurid, and it like everybody that got an interview
too tabloid
went on and on and on. I mean, you know, obviously they wanted
but
to
that
show
was kind of how that was kind of how it. That's kind of replicating in a sense. What it was like in a sense, there was this lurid fascination with the criminal acts and the crime, and certainly the trial, there was very much like this crazy hysteria.
But I don't think you address that by them producing something equally as lurid and sort of...
Well, I think they wanted to try and mirror the time in the style.
I think if you're doing it as a sort of pastiche or parody of that, then that needed to be more obvious. Instead, it just felt like... It felt like I watched it because it was only 4 parts. If it had been 10 parts, I would not have watched it. It should have been 2 or 3 parts. They should have compressed a lot of the personal stories down a lot more because some of them were just not that interesting. And I honestly thought that it was okay. But yeah, if you're trying to do something as a sort of, oh, you know, at the time it was very, that's what the newspapers were like. Let's see those rather than reproducing them yourself. Show us those lurid takes at the time. That should be the story.
Yeah.
The historic, sort of like, look at what the papers were writing. That would have been interesting. Rather than just saying, we'll do our own take on that. I don't think they were that clever. I think they just fucking, that's the way they did it, rather than anything clever.
Yeah.
Because you have the source material there. If you want to hark back to how lurid the details and the press were and everything, show us more of that. I would have loved to see more of the press coverage at the time and the paper coverage, but instead they just sort of did their own, where they interviewed these now old people talking about how fucking horrible it was.
Yeah.
But for too much.
It is strange how Jeffrey Dahmer and Charles Manson and like Richard Ramirez had this kind of female sympathy, right?
It's a psychological issue, isn't it?
I don't think it was as big as like they made it out in the documentary.
Dahmer.
They made it out like he was receiving, you know, sacks full of fan mail. But I think it was like a few slightly weird fetish women who were sending him letters saying how.
Well, even know, even like know. Stephen Avery has.
Yeah, like that woman that married
him. Married, yeah. Like, I mean, I think it's. I guess it's a thing, but it's. I'm not sure the psychology behind it. I don't know. You know, like even, you know, when they were saying that like women were sending him pictures like with their tits out and stuff like that. Richard,
well, it's called Bonnie and Clyde syndrome, yeah. Right?
No, it's hybristophilia.
I don't understand that at all. I really don't get it. But then to go on and be so sort of enthralled by this person who you know has done all these horrible things and then like, you know, marry them or whatever, it seems crazy. But then, and then to a couple of years later, get a divorce, because I think they got a divorce because she was like, oh, you know, when I found out about all the stuff involving kids, it was like, oh, okay, like that was the tipping point for you. Like that wasn't just the rapes,
so the multiple murders and rapes,
home invasions. It boiled down. I mean, fair enough. I mean, that is horrendous, but
yeah, the straw that broke the camel's back.
Should have been like the big warning sign to begin
with.
Oh
my God. It's like totally a scale, isn't it? Right. Because you've got like the bad boy syndrome where people like bikers or not bikers, but leather jacket wearing, or not just big guys like gangsters and tough guys and, you know, but then you've got like even less far along the scale is like people who are rude to servers in restaurants or like assholes.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? Like, yeah. And then, so there's like a whole spectrum, isn't there? And I guess like, I mean, I certainly could see like myself being actually, I'm not really attracted to bad girls in a sense. Like girls, I don't know. I've never been into the scary, like
Grace Jones.
Like, yeah.
Sexy superhero girls. Do you know what I mean? Like, I'm always a bit daunted and scared by them.
Wait.
Those
so,
tough women.
So, like, Captain Marvel intimidates you, is what you're telling
well,
me?
Well, I was watching The Crown.
Right.
Don't tell me Her Majesty the Queen intimidated you.
Well, she does a bit. And also, Margaret Thatcher's in it. Because she's obviously hanging out with Dennis Thatcher, who's right. This kind of nice, soft, sort of spoken, sort of gentle man who kind of hangs around with her.
Her husband, as they are also known.
Yeah. I don't know.
Groupie.
I just.
One groupie.
He's got hybristophilia for Thatcher.
Nice.
She's just such know, a like, bitch. She took those children's milk. I can't resist.
She let all of that garbage pile up sky high. I love this bitch.
You know what I mean? Like, though, like, just, yeah, I feel there's something, it's not for
not
me.
For
I feel like I'm struggling with my own assertiveness and masculinity, let alone.
I'll be honest with you. I like all kinds of women, strong women, weak
and
women.
I like all kinds of people. I just tend to like people who are actually nice and not murderers and rapists.
Yeah,
and
I don't want the murder.
It's true.
That's eternal.
I guess I've never got the idea of that sexy trope of like the Xenia from.
No, that's a big turnoff for me.
Like,
all of that. If you're a criminal, that doesn't do it for me. There's
right.
degrees of criminality, you know. If you're drinking
right,
a bit
so,
of weed
right,
at lunchtime
so,
or whatever,
right.
You know, I'll still be attracted to you probably.
But, all right, so not the criminals, but what about like She-Hulk?
No, see, like...
I just, mean, wasn't green.
I think it's just the fighting.
Okay, but what if she had like fucking beautiful eyes that you got lost in all the time?
I mean, what's her name? The boxer, Ronda Rousey.
Yeah,
or whatever.
What if her personality was just as ripped as her legs?
Hey!
What if she just had a fucking turbocharged personality
from heaven? You're
turning me. I mean, obviously, we're judging people very broadly here by saying that if they're large and fight or, you know, they're assertive, that they must be a bitch or anything like that. Obviously, you know, that's not right. But I think if you're saying that if they had, like if you knew them and they were just like a real bad bitch and sort of like big and aggressive and sort of punched people in pubs and things like that, that would turn you off.
I'm just trying to mirror that in my head because of the whole bad boy thing. And I'm
right,
wondering
right.
whether the bad girl
thing
works.
Yeah, I think
works.
If you're punching like, people in a drinking establishment generally, regardless of your gender or age or any other factor, I'm not sure I really want to be around you that much. You
it
know?
Doesn't excite you, though. I mean,
no,
it's
not exciting,
though. That's
no,
the thing,
I think
though,
it's
different. It's different from the mundane. You know, you come home to your boring wife and your boring kids. You work at the
we work at
you
the
wouldn't
box
like it.
There's
a beautiful woman at the bar. Some guy goes to hit on her, and he's being a bit aggressive, being a twat. She just sort of leans over, gives you a wink, and then just clocks him one right in the face. Huge bar brawl erupts. She's smashing chairs on people. Whew.
I mean,
I would be attracted.
Yeah. It's like EastEnders, I guess. But I don't know how often that really happens.
It's like EastEnders.
Obviously, never. Yeah, I've never seen it. No. I don't think there's any.
That
it's
was
rare.
A very sort of maybe I wouldn't even say Hollywood thing. I think it just happens in EastEnders and maybe from time to time Coronation Street when they don't have like a hot pie to talk about.
Maybe very specialized pornography as well.
You maybe, yeah.
God.
No, I don't know. It's a weird one, isn't it? I think I wouldn't be attracted to a like aggressive street fighting woman. But then again, I don't think I'd be attracted friendship wise to a street fighting man either, or whatever. You know what I mean? Like I know
street fighting woman. There's a song.
I don't need
sure.
any street fighting in my life. It turns out I don't
street fighting woman. I can't resist your knuckles.
I really wish you'd stop. Maybe tone. Down the street fighting, and then we can be friends. You know, like
here
just
do.
The street fighting woman.
If you want to be
down
friends,
in seven
with
pints
me,
of Stella, you gotta get your ass off the street and stop all of that fighting.
Oh man, street fighting woman.
Yeah, I don't know if I want a street fighting woman or man or any fighting people whatsoever.
I'll take anything.
I just
want
to surround myself with people who are just, you know, laid back, having a nice time, taking it as it comes.
Weed smoking woman.
Weed smoking
woman.
Let's sit on the couch together and be friends through weed. Take it easy, no more fighting on the street.
I mean, isn't the whole idea that you can not necessarily change them, but like you're with this dangerous person, and you get to see a different side.
Well, that's
like, you
a thing. I mean, that's
like
an age-old thing too, right? A lot of, I think that that's, I don't want to generalize, but I think that that is a, it feels like a fairly common situation for women and men.
Yeah, yeah.
In a relationship, right? You've got this man who might be a certain way, and you have a woman who thinks, I can change this person, and then inevitably they can't change that person.
Yeah.
Like I feel like that happens often enough, you know?
So do you think, though, that the desire and the belief that you can take someone who is clearly, like, semi out of control, follows their own rules and all that kind of stuff, and you can bend them to your will is
almost an
expression of your own ego and desire to dominate something like that?
Sorry, and to go back, I think it works vice versa as well. I'm not just saying it's only women who think they can change men and that's a bad thing. I'm talking about, like, this guy picks his nose a lot and she thinks that she's, you know, going to swoop in and stop him from picking his nose.
Oh, you've got to tidy him up.
But
yeah.
Men will do that to women as well.
It's for
right?
his own good.
I don't think they do.
I don't know that women or men see the other sex as a piece of clay to be molded into the shape that they want.
Mrs. F definitely did.
Oh, did
Mrs.
she?
F saw me as a lump of clay to be molded. She fucked it up.
Right.
She fucked it up real bad.
But there's definitely men that do it as well, right? Like
look at those ears. She did a terrible job on
you know,
those
like
ears.
like abusive men who sort of like, you know, will like dress their wives and stuff like that. And or maybe that's not the point. Maybe that's just like part of the cycle of abuse or something.
Yeah, yeah,
but like,
yeah.
You hear about that too, right? I mean, it's.
But I mean, I don't think they're looking ways. To change someone. They're looking to purely dominate
control
someone.
And dominate yeah. somebody. Yeah,
I think the best thing I've always thought is that the best couples are those who both are independent and have lives separately, but are better together, and come together and can join their two independently successful and happy lives and have these moments together that are positive. You know, I think when people are controlling the other
there's an imbalance of like sort of power in the relationship or whatever.
Yeah, like you obviously do have to give, but at the same time I think that there has to be it's hard to be to see that you're being controlled or being sort of I think if you're in these situations.
But I mean, you get some people are just very sweet, trusting, nice people, and they like, and also a lot of these sort of predatory types who look to control someone and dominate them and ruin their life look for a specific kind of person who's trusting and sweet and nice and then pounce on them. Like, that's what they're looking for. They're not looking for She-Hulk. You know what I mean? No, they're not breaking Ronda Rousey.
I also think people are sometimes looking for too much. They think that, you know, this person who I'm looking for as my partner is going to be my best friend and my lover, and I'm going to spend all my time with them, and we're going to have the same hobbies, and we're going to do everything together. Like, I think that can sometimes be the wrong idea of going in to look for that.
Oh, it pisses me off so much when you see, and again, to generalize, I will say it's mainly women who make a list of what they want.
Sometimes you do see
like.
Couples who are like that, and they're very happy, by the way, and they're
occasionally,
and great,
but you're going to be, most people are going to be miserable. It would be like saying, I'm going out to dig for gold, and I'm not just going to find a little tiny bit of gold. I'm going to find the biggest load of gold that's ever been founded by any gold digger ever. I'm going to dig it up. I'm going to be happy ever after. Yeah, there's going to be a crown and a scepter.
And I'm going to be now the king.
Yeah, they're going to claim me king of the realm. It's like, can you just fucking settle for finding a little bit of gold? Because that's, I mean, like most relationships, you find someone, like Sip says, someone nice you get along with.
Yeah.
You're attracted to each other.
No street fighting.
No street fighting woman. Just chill.
Maybe a little bit. Like one weekend a year.
That's something you'd have to sort out in the relationship. That's the power dynamic.
Yeah.
You never let me street fight anymore. I'm not going to do the dishwasher. You know, that's the kind of level you're arguing about a dishwasher. She wants to be out there street fighting. It's a problem. But these lists, he has to be this and he has to be that and blah, blah, blah. And we have to be soulmates, but we also have to spend time apart. It's like, good luck. What you're saying is I don't want a relationship. Just be honest. I don't actually want a relationship unless God himself comes down and decides he wants to date me on Tinder. That's what you're looking for. You're looking for the impossible dream. So just straight up admit to yourself you don't want a relationship unless it's fucking perfect.
God is like a criminal. He's done some bad stuff. You know.
You just damned yourself.
What if God was one of us, though? Did you ever think of that? Just a slob like one of
like
us.
Like one of us.
Just a stranger on the bus trying to make his way back home. Nobody's talking on the phone. Not even Toby Lerone. So,
right. Let's stop.
Yeah, no,
Thank you, everyone.
Yeah, I feel like we've already. I feel like we're like neck deep in shit right now.
We've covered a lot of
heavy ground.
But Lewis finally rounded it off with some nice heretical speech. So we should probably end the podcast.
Yeah, no, that's a good idea. Yeah. I thank you both for once again doing it. We've done so many of these podcasts now. It's
160,
insane.
I think we've done. We've been doing this for nearly
I'm
5 years.
I'm not saying that if you love God, it's like Bonnie and Clyde, because he's a bit of a bad boy. That's all. That's all I'm saying.
You're just damning yourself deeper, buddy. You're just digging into the dam. Digging right in.
Look. All you need to do is go into a little church and be like, I confess. And there you go.
That's only Catholics.
Nah, I'll do that later.
God, I'll do it later. I'm here to confess to you in your holy light. I have been street fighting once again. I didn't want to do it, but I've been out there and I have been street fighting up
a
storm.
A
Lord, I be a street fighting
all
woman.
Day, every day, I am fighting on the streets.
Take that, Lord Bath.
And my wife's been doing it too.
And I love her
I love her so much.
We're a match made in heaven. We street fight together.
Three Hail Marys and a couple of prayers. That's what you
It. Yeah. Just a couple of lashings. What do they call that when you whip yourself in the back?
A good Saturday night?
Flagellate. Is that a flagellation?
Yeah, yeah.
That's a flagellation.
Just a big, huge flagellate.
Ooh, I love that.
You should cut down on the flagellate and it's bad for you.
Yeah. You should pat yourself on the back instead. Like Donald Trump.
Somebody's got to do it, I guess. Man, oh man.
I'm going to pat myself on the back more often. It's actually quite satisfying.
Yeah. Oh,
well done, me.
Yeah. Oh,
good job, me.
Good street fight.
Another street fight one.
Another ass whooping delivered.
Well done, smashing that guy's head into that fridge. Oh, God.
See you next time on Triforce.
See you next time, everybody.
All right, bye.
Bye.